The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Doing that, I was face to face with it. It was holding me by my throat, and it felt like it was sucking something out of me.
I probably should have been more scared than I was when I witnessed the exorcism.
I turned and looked on my right side. When I did, there's a beam on the side of the tree, a large beam. It's looking at me and I'm looking at it.
After I hit the lock button and looked back up, I saw red eyes staring back at me.
That they're going to show multiple gods all over the earth, be able to speak in people's languages. And at that point, it kind of converge into this one entity, which will be revealed as extraterrestrial. You'll realize that aliens are the gods of old. And at that point, it'll wipe religion out of the context of humanity.
No way. It couldn't have been a person. I know that. I know that people can't run through the woods like that.
So this thing comes into view, and I see it. It's 50 yards away from me. It's walking. It's walking on two legs. It's huge. This is a big, hairy looking being.
Welcome. I'm your host, and this is Uncomfortable. Before we get into tonight's guest, I just want to take a moment to remind you, July 30th, I'll be supporting the show at this year's Michigan Bigfoot Conference in Chelsea, Michigan. And then on September 10th, down in Dowagiac, Michigan, southwest corner of Michigan, I will be hosting Bigfoot and Brews. That's going to be an all-day event. Tickets are on sale now. Head over to bigfootandbrews.com. Pick up your tickets. If you want to be a vendor at the show, there's a tab there for vendors as well. Sign up, purchase your vendor's ticket. If you want to help support the show, you can also do that in the tickets as well. So, tonight's guest comes to us by way of last month's town hall meeting in West Branch, Michigan. He was one of the four courageous gentlemen that got up in front of the crowd and told their experiences. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you would please give a warm, uncomfortable welcome to Mr. Shane Petrie. Shane, welcome to Uncomfortable.
How you doing?
Doing well. How are you, sir?
Doing excellent. Doing excellent.
Shane, when I was up there hosting that town hall, I actually turned on my recording equipment, which was kind of outside the backside of that room, and I did it for selfish reasons. One, I wanted to be able to go back and listen to myself and see how just a big idiot I made myself up there. That was my first time hosting any kind of segment like that. And I was particularly happy with the way my microphones picked everything up. It actually recorded everything very well. And so I contacted the people that put that on, and I asked if I could have the permission to air that as a show, and they were all for it, but they wanted me to reach out to each of the four individuals that got up and spoke and get their approval first, which made a lot of sense. Unfortunately, I've only been able to get a hold of two of you, so you're the second one. If you happen to know anybody that might know the other two gentlemen, if you can, by the way, of any means, try to get me in touch with them, I would appreciate it. But
other than Phil, Shaw. I have his email, and I'm in contact with him off and on about some recent activity in our area, but I did not know them personally. No.
And unfortunately, on the recording, they did not. The other two did not give enough information.
Right.
Phil Shaw actually got me your information. And I reached out to you. We've been trying to put this together for a couple of weeks, but we finally got to it. And just 2 weeks ago, I had the first gentleman, Don.
Yep, from Hale, that's sighting he had. I remember that.
The one with the big silhouette that got up and moved. So. Well, Shane, let's start off. Tell us about what you ran into.
Well, it was April 23rd. We were on Turner Road, which is in between. It would be 65 and 23. Turner Road runs about a 6-mile stretch there. It's heavily wooded, very populated with deer, wildlife. It's not an uncommon thing. We were down by the river. My mom actually lives on the All Gray River. She butts up with 80 acres that has been in our family for close to 60 years. And me, my son, and one of his friends were down by the river there, and we decided to have a bonfire that night. We dug a small pit down by the river. This is actually the first time we've really done this. We had to clear off a little area, and it's there's a lot of grass, and my mom was worried about, you know, burning the hay field, but at any rate, we did it anyways. And they decided to go down by the river and play around by the bank a little bit. And after I got the fire going and I had it contained, I wasn't too worried, set up the chairs, I stood up and I walked over to the bank. And mind you, the bank drops, it's probably about 4 foot down to like what I would call almost like a sandbar, and then it drops down into the river like another 3 foot. So it's about a 7 foot drop. And I was standing, I don't know, I'm 6 foot two. So I was up, and I seen this, what I looked like about a 6-inch human footprint. And so, you know, I said to my son's name is Caden. I said, Caden, and then I won't use his friend's name, but I said, hey, are you guys barefoot? You know, it's like 40 degrees out here. And they're like, what? They both looked at me oddly. And I said, what is that? And my son, over the years, he's kind of followed along in my steps too, as far as like having interest in Bigfoot and various things like that. And we looked at it and we could not figure out what it was. So I got a closer look, and I actually have pictures that I shared at the town hall meeting. You can see clearly the 6-inch almost humanoid print. It was nothing I've seen before. It was small. So if it was along the lines of a Bigfoot or a Sasquatch, it would have to be what I would consider a juvenile.
Right.
What was odd was the steps was coming up out of the river. And so there was one step that it landed on the bank. And then the next step, you could see where it kind of took a step and then slid down into the river again with its left foot, and then disappeared. So whatever it was, stepped up onto the bank for a split second and then stepped back down into the river. And mind you, at this time, this April 23rd, I think it was just a little over 40, maybe 42, 43 degrees. It was not cold or warm enough to be barefoot down by the river.
Now, you said it appeared like it slid back into the river. Are you talking like it lost its footing and slid in like the mud or the loose dirt?
Absolutely. And the next step, it returned back in the river. And so I was thinking that, well, whatever it was traversing long waterways, which I've heard, or I've done some research on it, that they're smart enough in order to be undetected that they'll, you know, go down rivers and creeks and stay undetected that way. And the All Gray River is probably only about 2.5 foot at the deepest year round. It's not real deep.
Okay.
It was just something unique. So I took some pictures. You know, we've had some other odd things around there. As a kid growing up, it was about 8 years before that, I was up visiting my parents, and my mom and dad were getting ready to go to bed. And, it's very dark there. It can be kind of creepy, to be honest with you, but I was going out to my car. I was going to meet a friend for a short time. And when I stepped out in the yard, something across the road screamed, and it was a blood-curdling scream. Almost, it was enough that I ran back inside the house, into my mom and dad's room, and my dad was like, oh, it's just a lynx. He said, it's just a lynx. Curling. I said, no, this is no lynx, Dad. So, you know, there's been just various odd things like that that have happened in this property. But, you know, and I've done a lot of research with, obviously, like the Sierra Nevada sounds. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a whoop. It wasn't anything of this nature, but it was like a scream. Like whatever it was close and knew that I was walking out into the yard and screamed at me. And I, you know, I've been up there most of my life. My grandparents grew up there, you know, were there before my dad, and I wasn't afraid of anything like this until this point. And I turned and hightailed it back inside. I've never been so scared in my life.
Let's kind of break down the scream that you heard. What were the attributes of it? What was, I mean, you said not necessarily like the Sierra sounds or anything.
No, because I could replay those in my, you know, I know what those are, the whoops and the, this was a legitimate scream. And I couldn't even, like I said, I couldn't even do it if I tried. And it was so loud and so piercing, and it echoed through the barnyard because we have a big barn there. It echoed through the barnyard back by where my car was parked that I turned and ran back inside, and I did not go back out to my car. I called my friend and said, I'm not coming over. I don't know what that was. And he's like, oh, dude, you're crazy. I said, no. And I haven't heard nothing like that since. Now, you know, my uncle lives across the street. He owns that 80 across the road over there. And I would assume it was in that direction. If I had to redo it across Turner Road and back in the woods there. I wish I could compare it to something, but for me to turn and beat foot back in the house like I did and literally run back into my mom and dad's room and say, and this was, I was in my early 30s at this time. So
now you say you've done a, you know, like I do a lot of your investigation or your delving into this topic is is done on YouTube like many of us do, and yeah. You know, have you ever come across a video or anything that would represent a fairly accurate description of what you heard
recently? I'm part of like about every single Bigfoot you know club on Facebook, and there was a, I believe it was in Idaho, and a guy had taped something that he was out in his backyard, and it was a scream. And when I heard that, that's exactly what it was, almost identical. It was like I can't even like, I mean, it was enough. Like I said, I turned and ran back inside, and that was about as close as I've ever came to it. But what he had, and like I said, I believe it was a guy from Idaho. And I should have reached out to him because I could have had a good conversation about it. But
now, obviously you're not a Bigfoot or whatever it was that made that noise, that scream. But that's that simulation that you just did sounded remarkably similar to something that I've heard in a couple of TikTok videos. And I've talked about this in other shows. There's a guy out of Russia who has been putting out TikTok videos, and you know, it's cold. You can see his breath. He's out at some really wicked old barn that's on somebody's property, and he's got several of these videos. You never see whatever it is that's making this noise, but it's something inside the barn in the darkened corners of this thing. Many times there's, you know, items being thrown across the barn, thrown at the doorway. He's speaking to it in Russian, but when it yells, there's a very odd type scream out of this. And
you just gave me the chills because I mean, it was a scream. It was, like I said, it wasn't a whoop. It wasn't, you know, and my dad explained it as a lynx. And I've done research, YouTube that too, like sound, what does a lynx sound like? And it was nothing like that.
You know, so, and it's odd because I had another gentleman who's listens to my show all the time. He's from Muskegon, Michigan. And we had done a show together about some ghostly type stuff that he had going on in his younger years. And shortly after that, he sent me a message and said, "Watch this video," because he and his wife or fiance at the time, they were just getting home. They were walking from the driveway. I think it was like wooded on one side of it. They were going up to the front porch, and something screamed at him from inside the wood line. And he sent me this Russian TikTok video, and he's like, you know, I know this sounds like complete horseshit, but this noise is what screamed at us. And, you know, each time I've seen these videos, I've just laughed them off. It's, you know, somebody's in the corner of the barn. They're not, you know, just doing it for fun. And it's like, there's been several people that I've talked to who have indicated that that noise that's coming out of that barn is very, very similar to the screams that they're hearing out in the woods.
Yeah. And that's been enough for me over the into my car and getting back inside quick as possible. Cause it was something that, definitely left a mark on my life. I was like, what in the world was that? And, I've never heard it again ever since. But, I also have my dad passed away suddenly about 5 years ago, and we used to get some good chats, but he lived there, his whole life, and then taught school in Pinconning. And then when he retired, he moved back there. But him and a friend of his were back in the back 80, and the very back 40 of it is, mainly pine, very thick pine. And this is my other story I have. But he had called me the next day, and he was one, he's been outside his whole life. And so he didn't get shaken easily with anything. You know what I mean? He was one of those guys that would walk out deer hunting 5:30, 6 a.m. pitch black, no worries. But he called me, says, "Hey," you know, and this was probably, that was about 8 years ago, probably. He's been gone 5 now. But he called me and he said, "You're going to get a kick out of this." And I said, "What?" He said, "Me and Clyde," and that's an Indian friend of his that he's had for a lot of years, and they grew up together. He said, "I was out in the woods, and Clyde went with us, and we were it was getting dusk, and they were back there by the pine, you know, and like I said, this back 40 is almost real, almost so thick you can't see 10, 15 feet in front of you. It's that old jack pine. Yeah. It's full." And he said, "Back deep in the shadows," he said, "we had something grunting at us." And he said, "At first I thought it was a wounded deer." You know, he's heard deer and other animals that were wounded, like mortally wounded, and were like warning you not to come close, you know. And so he says, "But this freaked me and Clyde out enough that we had to go up and get guns." They went up to get shotguns because they didn't know what it was. They couldn't see it, but every time they got closer, this thing would grunt. And I said, "Well, what did it sound like?" He said, it sounded just like a you know, and he said, at first he thought, okay, deer. But then he says, as he got closer, it was a much deep guttural grunt. And, and enough for him and his friend to have to go get shotguns. And, when they came back, they got near to the area where it was, and it was gone.
Okay.
And he said, "We still don't, until the day," and this is on the same property, "he still don't know what that was." You know, he would play around with the idea that Bigfoot was out there, but he was never really as serious about it as I was, as far as research and everything. But he still didn't know what that was to the day. And that's all been on that same 80 acres there. Actually 160, because like I said, my uncle owns 80 across the street. And my mom and dad own the 80 on their side. So, you know, there's been some various different things that have been kind of unexplainable.
Have you ever checked BFRO or any of the other data collection agencies as far as other sightings in that area?
I have not. Phil told me that not too far in the National City area, just north of us, there is what's called the National Gypsum Swamp. And so it's like 6,000 acres of basically state land, and it's very swampy. You get some huge deer that go back in there because people, it's almost impassable. Mm-hmm. But there has been some sightings of some odd things up there, I guess, is what he was telling me. I need to get more into it, I guess. You know, you just kind of write it off. These things happen, and then until you get involved in podcasts like this or going to a town hall, I think, well, hey, you know, that could have been, very well could have been something. So,
yeah, you know, I find that fairly often. There's a, and I guess it's just human nature. You have something happen that doesn't register as being something you recognize, or you don't, it seems a little off, but human nature is to just kind of dispel it and not pay that much attention to it. And as long as it's not something that's persistent or continues to happen, you kind of, right, you know, just kind of put it out of your mind, and you don't put a whole lot of credence into it. And to be honest with you, you know, I had an experience years ago while I was out hunting. And I was in a very populated area. I mean, this was basically a neighborhood that had houses that were on acre plots of land that stretched back maybe 2 acres. And it butted up against a farm, you know, a cornfield. And so I had permission to hunt this property, and you know, I basically ended up getting paced back to my my hunting stand. And then again, as I was walking out, something followed me for about 120 of the 150 yards back to my car.
Right.
And, you know, it was, you know, I had a flashlight. I was shining my light into the wood line. I could hear it walking, fully expected to see a deer. And there was nothing there, but I could hear it moving. And, you know, this, like I said, I've been into Bigfoot and UFOs and other kinds of, you know, hauntings and stuff like that pretty much my whole life. Yep. But at that point, that was, even though Bigfoot was on my radar, it was never a thought that I had. You know, at the time that it happened, I was not thinking, oh God, that could be a Bigfoot. Wasn't entering my mind. It was like, you know, had have been a deer, right?
Yeah, right. And that's, I think, like you had mentioned, that's something that happens, you know, often to people. And yeah, like I said, if I would have, at that time, after that scream, you know, I believe I had my cell phone. That was still the cell phone era. That was only 10, 12 years ago. But when it screamed at me, you know, the last thing I was thinking about, you know, and I always tell my son, he brings it up. He's like, Dad, what would you do if one ran across, you know? I said, well, that's why I carry my cell phone. I'd get out, you know, chase and get some pictures. Of course, when one or something screams at me, what do? I run inside like a, you know, 10-year-old kid, yeah, into my mom and dad's bedroom and saying, geez, oh man, what was that? You know, so I don't know exactly what I'd do, to be honest with you. But yeah, you just don't prepare yourself for that, or you don't think about it at that current time, you know?
Well, so, you know, I've talked to other people. Now you kind of indicated that you're a bit of a weekend warrior as far as investigating or looking for sign of them. And and I've spoke with some other gentlemen, you know, some from the east side of Michigan who might be a step higher as far as the amount of effort that they were putting in behind investigating this stuff. And he was fairly well seasoned. He was doing this on a regular basis, and he and another guy had gone out to a piece of property, and he basically told me that, you know, they were confronted by two or three of these things, to within, you know, they were maybe 35 feet away from them. Picked them up on, I can't remember if it was FLIR or night vision.
Okay.
And within the blink of an eye, they had adjusted their positioning and were within feet of them. Now this guy had everything you could possibly want as far as, you know, night vision,
right.
Recording abilities, cell phone camera, and, you know, after this experience, he had called me and we talked about it, and he was disappointed in himself. You know, he's like, how the hell am I going to call myself a legitimate investigator when I didn't even have the ability to raise my camera and take a picture of this thing that was feet in front of me? He's like, it scared me that bad.
You hear that story through and through. I don't know how many different times, you know, someone will say, hey, you know, this thing was 10, 15 feet in front of me. Mm-hmm. And you know, you hear about guys that are hunting and or whatever, and they just kind of freeze. You know, they don't know what they see or what it is. And they, you know, all these years of research and things that they tell themselves they do, if this situation came up, and then they just freeze. And I can see where that would happen.
Yeah.
Well, the
gentleman I had in my episode 2 and 3, I just released it a couple of weeks ago. It was called Opening Day, down here in Southwest Michigan. He literally had been getting a phone call from, there was a group of four of them, his dad, yeah, his brother-in-law, and another gentleman. And, he had gotten a call from his dad. And then as this creature was making its way through the swamp area, then the brother-in-law called him, and he said, you know, I basically had my phone in my hand when this thing walked out in front of me. You know, maybe 50 yards away. And he's like, my phone was literally in my hand, and I never thought once to just swipe over to the side and take a picture. He's like, it never even entered my mind. Furthest thing from my mind.
That's an interesting point, though, because like I said, that story, that whole situation, and I like I was telling you earlier, before we started the show, I've seen almost every single documentary, spoof movies, you know, exist. I've seen them all, and
that's a great movie, you know, by the way. I gotta say, I know.
Oh,
Exist is a fantastic movie.
I've turned down a lot of people where they're like, well, you're just crazy. I don't know if I'm ever going to go in the woods again. I get them to watch that. Yeah. Cause there is a certain fear, you know, and even the light at heart that don't believe in it, you know, they're talking at the end of the movie, shoot it, you know? Yeah. So yeah, that's a great movie, but, it happens. People just see, I don't know if it's, you know, a spiritual thing or what it is, but you literally just freeze. I think a lot of times when situations come up, you don't even think about the, you know, possibilities, especially of getting video or things.
Especially when you got an 8-foot monster.
Yeah. You got an 8-foot monster right in front of you.
Let's, if you don't mind, let's double back to your first story about the finding the print.
Okay.
Now, you indicated that your son, Caden, actually found the print, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yep. I seen it, and then I pointed it out to him, and I said, what was that? And so he was originally the one that took the first picture from his phone.
Did you want to bring him in? Would he like to talk about it at all?
Yep. Yep. You're going to speak up. This is my son, Caden.
Caden, welcome to Uncomfortable. Go ahead and tell me about what you thought when you saw this print in the ground there.
Well, my first thought was obviously, oh, that's a Bigfoot track, obviously. I didn't know what else it was, because why would somebody be barefoot down by a river when it's like 40 degrees and cold?
And how did you feel about it? Were you excited, or did it kind of put a scare into you? Or
I was kind of spooked, but then as I looked at it more, kind of got excited, because not that many people get to see stuff like that.
That's very true. Now, what were you guys doing in that area to begin with? Were you camping there, or?
just having a fire, and me and my friend were messing around down by the river.
So you were just there for the day and messing around, huh?
Yeah, our property actually butts right up to the river. So the Au Gray River splits our property and the neighbor's property. So, yeah.
So how far from where you were having a fire and you guys were doing your family thing? How far from that was this print? Would you say?
Yeah, about 15 feet down on the riverbank. Yeah.
Now, you know that. Somehow I knew you were going to say that. And isn't that interesting? Because so many times we hear in these people's accounts that they were just out doing their own thing. They weren't they weren't out looking for Bigfoot or anything. They were just out enjoying doing their day-to-day thing, enjoying time with their family. And then you find something that is so close. It's almost like it wouldn't surprise me that, you know, this thing had become interested in what you guys were doing. Obviously probably heard that there were other children in the area having fun. Go ahead.
Another thing that was weird is it was right next to the road. So like, why would, if it was Bigfoot, why was it right close to the road? You know, if your car goes past, oh, there's Bigfoot standing right there. Like, why would it be to the road?
I agree with that, but you know, and your dad can probably attest to this too from looking into it as much. There are a ton of roadside sightings. Everybody and their brother reports either seeing it crossing the road or being on the shoulder of the road as they're going by. So, it makes for weird bedfellows. I don't know why they do that, but it's been talked about enough where it does seem to be a fairly common aspect of these things.
And it's the bridge actually was about probably 20 yards further down the river, right there where the road crosses the bridge. And so 15 yards, it was close. So potentially what I'm getting at there is if it traversed the waterways, like I'm a firm believer they do, in order to not be detected, they easily could have slipped under the bridge as a car went by. You know, you wouldn't even know. That's in my opinion, that kind of scares him. He says, but in my opinion, you know, that's, they could dive under there. I think they're highly intelligent, you know,
I agree. Throughout the years of my, you know, delving into YouTube videos and podcasts and reading accounts and, you know, there's the one-offs every so often where they produce an aggressive behavior towards people. But for the most part, they seem to be pretty benign. And I think here's a problem with humans. I think we have this ability to put human traits on animals. Yeah. You know, like I do it to my dog. You know, you come home, you talk to your dog. Hey, how you doing? You know, what have you been doing all day? You know, silly stuff like that. So and it becomes a habit. So, you know, I come home, I talk to my dog every day, you know, and when you stop and you think about what you're doing, it's like, that's ridiculous. Why am I doing that? But I think the term is anthropomorphizing, where you tend to attribute human traits to an animal. And because these things walk on two legs and they have a humanish silhouette, you know, they're anatomically, they look more like us than anything else. Sometimes I think maybe we run the risk of placing human traits on them when they don't necessarily need to be. But then you hear about the types of behavior and the things that they do. And then that brings me back around to these things are very intelligent. And then they're closer to us than what we might realize. The thing that surprises me that throughout all the years that I've been delving into this is the lack of accounts that you hear about that have any type of tool usage or the usage of fire. I would think that if they were as closely related to us as I think or maybe hope that they are,
mm-hmm.
that somewhere there would be some reports of these things being witnessed using tools, however rudimentary they might be, but yeah. also using fire.
Correct.
It would make sense, wouldn't it? And that's not something you hear of very often.
No, and you don't.
If it ever.
No. The closest thing I would say that they, as far as tools, would be, you get a lot of markers.
The wood knocks. Yeah.
Yeah. Tree marks not tree marks, but as far as like building wayward paths, I think they mark certain areas that that they traverse, and that's about as close as you get as far as that stories. We did have a situation, not a situation, but a tree, two trees that were leaned up perfectly together in an X. And I do have a picture of that too on our neighbor's property across the river that we found kind of interesting. That was just down from where the footprint was. So, just something that there is no way these trees fell and leaned against each other that perfectly in an X. We got a picture of that too.
That's interesting. X's are something that you hear about on a real regular basis. If you don't mind, when we get done recording, if you would like to share those photographs that you have of the print and the X, please send those to me, and I'll post those when we air the show.
Yeah, I have one more thing. When we after we left that town hall meeting in West Branch, I believe somebody was talking about baiting or setting out apples, and then my son happened to hear something about a garlic. So the first thing he wanted to do was find some garlic, and I thought it was crazy, but I'm like, all right, well, we'll do it. So we took some garlic back by the pine part of the property I was telling you that's really thick. And it was not too far from where my dad heard that grunt, actually, because he had pointed out to me at a later time where it was. So we placed a couple of cloves of garlic up in a tree. How high was it, Kate?
Maybe like 5 feet off.
Oh, five foot off the ground, up in a couple, pine trees. We wedged them in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went back to Bay City here because I live in Bay City, Michigan, actually. And he stays up there with my mom and my ex-wife. But I told him, I said, go back there and check that. And he had went back and checked it a couple of different times. There was nothing. And then I'll let you tell him the rest. I'll let him tell you the rest of the story. He went back and checked it. How long ago was it?
Maybe like 3-4 weeks ago, right after we set out.
Yeah, it's about 3 or 4 weeks afterwards, but go ahead, Kate.
Not like that, but like a week after. And when me and my friend went back there on our dirt bikes, all the garlic, how the garlic has like the extra skin on the outside?
Yeah.
That was all ripped off, and the garlic was gone.
And that kind of freaked him out. It was literally whatever it was, peeled the garlic and then took the garlic itself and the peels. And I asked him if he had got pictures. He's like, no, Dad, I didn't get pictures.
I didn't have my phone on me.
Yeah. So one of those situations, but the garlic was actually peeled apart and taken from the tree about a week later. Yes. Very,
not to take anything away from that experience, but the thing with baiting is if you put any type of food item out in the wilderness and don't, put some kind of a trail cam or something to witness what it was that actually took it. You do kind of run the risk of it being just whether it's a raccoon or a squirrel or a magpie or,
That's what I said too. Could be a raccoon. Raccoons are known to do crazy things, but it was just interesting to say the least. Cause my uncle has some trail cams across the road that he uses, and he's never had anything. He's had some bobcats and some various things that are strange to see, but nothing odd has ever showed up. So,
but the interesting thing is, and I think I talked about this at the town hall, was a previous guest I had. I believe he was from Lower Jackson County, Artie Anderson. He suggested that he had in upwards of, I think he said, 12 subjects that lived on his property over the last 30 years. And so there's his property meets the headwaters of, I think maybe it's the Kalamazoo River, if I'm remembering right. But on the opposite shore of the stream, they would have, he would go out and he would take his lawn tractor and he would cut down the overgrown grass along the edges of the river. Well, when he would do that, all the wild garlic would be sprouting.
Right.
And when he would do that and get done, he would notice in the next day or so that all that garlic, the wild garlic that had been cut down, had been gathered up and taken away.
Huh. Yeah.
And so, you know, this is like the third or fourth time now that I've heard something about garlic.
Right.
You know, and I mean, it's just, it's odd. I mean, it could be coincidental for sure, but.
Yeah. That's what I was saying with that. You never know. I need to probably take a little more of a serious look at it. You know what I mean? Start, if I was going to start doing this, you know, investing in a trail cam, but you hear, you know, those things always go haywire when and if anything comes in, they've been known to be ripped off the trees, you know, in various situations that you hear a lot of that. So, you know,
And there's so many theories, you know, whether or not they can actually see light from the infrared sensors, whether or not they can smell the plastic, whether they can hear the internal components when they kick on to take a picture, you know, I mean, they're all valid, you know, thoughts.
Yeah. Interesting.
The one thing I will mention, you know, if you're looking to take a serious look at it, a gentleman by the name of Robert Kreider down in New Mexico. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know of him or not, but I believe, if I'm correct, he is in the process of producing trail cams that will not have IR light.
Okay.
In order to function. Now, I don't know if he is selling those yet, or if they're still in the process of being developed.
Right.
He is, his bionic ear, has actually been used in the latest season of Expedition Bigfoot. He had Russ Accord come down to his place down in New Mexico to pick it up, months ago. And actually, it's made an appearance in the show a couple of times.
So, what, I got moved.
I watched that show too. Yep, and it's Sunday Discovery Plus. They got a new documentary with Jay from Jay and Silent Bob.
Yeah, and Jack Osborne. Yeah, from the Osbournes. Yeah.
Yeah, you seen that? Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. That's on Sunday night.
I think it comes out this Sunday, right?
That's correct. Yeah. That's one. I have not seen that one yet, so I'm constantly diving into those things, you know.
And another one that I've just been watching recently is it's produced by the group called Small Town Monsters. They do a ton of different documentaries, whether it's on UFOs or the Minerva Monster and all kinds of stuff. They've actually got a new segment that's coming out. It seems like it's coming out at one every couple of months. It's called the Bigfoot Project. And one of the crew from Small Town Monsters actually purchased some property in the area of Minerva, where the Minerva Monster happened. And they have several acres out there, and they've been going out to, there's a secondary cabin out there. So several of these guys have been going out there and they've been getting some really interesting results. The most recent episode aired 3 days ago, I think. And they had Cliff Brackman out there, which seemed to be for, 2 weeks or two days out of the weekend. And they had some interesting stuff, you know. I mean, obviously there's no video of anything walking around or anything, but you know, all these shows, you know, there's some production value to them. So you got to take that into consideration. But, you know, I still go back and I watch Finding Bigfoot. Even though they're overly produced and, you know, they're not always catching something or finding any good evidence, but you know, I think it still shows a good cross section of if that's what you want to do, those are some really good tips on how to go about doing it.
Right. Yeah. And that's mainly, that was my two, you know, reasons, or one of my main reasons, I'm sorry, is that I watched those. It's just to get, you know, to see what everybody else in the field. And even though, like I said, I'm just a part timer, I enjoy it. I find it fascinating, just to see what they are doing. You know what I mean? To get these things to come in, you know,
yeah,
for lack of better terminology. But
back to the footprint. I'm sorry. I just keep coming up with questions about this. Did it ever cross your mind to possibly go back and cast it?
Phil had asked me that same thing. I didn't have, we don't, you know, it's not something I just have laying around. Sure. And I've never done it. I've watched people do it, you know, on these shows. But unless you YouTube something, I imagine that you probably could YouTube it. You know, there's gotta be a science to it. You want to get it right. And so, no, I never thought about it. And actually we haven't been back there since, have we? What? Have you been back there to look and see if there's any on the riverbank? Mm. No, we haven't been back there since. We should go back, take a look. It wasn't a deep, deep impression though,
but like it was trying to keep its feet like,
yeah, it was a step feet. And then a step on the sand, and then it slid down back into the river. So
as far as describing the print itself, did it appear to have it appear to narrow at what would be the arch, and did it have a narrow heel, or did it seem to be a bit wider?
I would have to, it narrowed, but I would have to go back and take another look at it. Like I said, I have it in my phone. You can definitely see that it, you know, it's a human-like footprint. And what I would consider, and I've done enough research on this, the metatarsal break, you can see where there's, I don't know if I said that right, but you can see where there is like a missing part of the footprint.
Really?
You know, where that bend. Yeah, oh yeah, definitely. You can see it. When I showed everybody at that, you know, at that town hall meeting, there was quite a few people who were fascinated.
Yeah,
and I actually had a couple people approach me and they say, look, you know, I know that you're just here just kind of getting information, but if you would ever like someone to come out and do an investigation, you know, I've had some people reach out to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would have to clear that with my mom, but, you know, very well could be some activity there. I don't know. Just stuff that we've just over the years kind of blew off, I guess. But
I will say this, and this is no disrespect to whoever spoke with you about that. But just as a heads up, and I say this to not only you but any of my listeners, if you're having experiences on a piece of property and you want somebody to come in, do your due diligence as far as vetting the people that you're going to ask to come out.
Okay.
Because there are some that I have run into that portray themselves as one thing, and then when you find out later, I certainly would not invite those people into my home.
Right.
And if I wouldn't invite them into my home, I would not invite them onto my property. So that's all I'll say about that.
That's where I was going with that, you know, too. I chuckle out of it. I told the guy, I said, thanks, but you know, it's private property. You know, we're not, it's been in the family for 60 years. You know, it's not something that, well, it wasn't something I've actually even, I had two different guys approach me,
yeah,
you know, on the way out when we were leaving. So.
And again, this is no disrespect to those people, and I don't know who they were. I don't know anything about them.
Right.
But there have been a couple of that I have met that come to find out later on down the road, not somebody I'd want to be associated with. So
yeah,
just
no, absolutely.
You know, yeah. I think it's a good idea to have somebody come out and investigate for you. But that being said, I've talked to several people and I've heard of many instances that when you have other people come out to a property, it seems that if you are common to a piece of property, there seems to be some kind of a reciprocated, okay, you're here, we're here, it's cool, just don't mess with anything. Just don't mess anything up.
Right, but
when you start bringing other people that they are not used to, and they have not created an understanding of those people being on that property, it tends to stir things up in a in not so good of a way.
Right.
So, yeah. You know,
if I was to do anything, it would be, you know, professionally, and I to reach out to one of these guys that are really well known, you know what I mean? And I would have to get some more, you know, activity or something strange to happen, more footprints where I'm like, hey, we got something here. You know what I mean? Get a hold of BRFO, get someone to come out.
Yeah.
That is well known, you know, but we haven't had anything other than those three things.
There are some good investigators in Michigan. There absolutely are. So, you know, once we get done recording, I've got some names I can throw by you if you're interested. But it's a screwy community. I mean, you know, there's a lot of divisiveness. There's a lot of shots that are taken at each other. You know, then you get to the, go ahead.
Unfortunately, you know, it comes into a money thing probably down the road. You know what I mean? I would imagine the first person that gets any kind of viable information or viable, you know, specimen, it's a big money grab, you know, the way I would see it.
It is, you know, I'm sure it would be. You know, the thing that just really becomes an issue of contention for me is with the number of shows that have put high dollars into documenting this stuff, the number of documentaries that have invested the huge amount of time and effort and money that it takes to put together a documentary. You know, we're just not getting that holy grail. We're not getting, you know, still till this day, the Patterson-Gimlin film is the holy grail of what we have. Now, I've seen some videos that strike me as being very organic, and I'm like, you know, my gut tells me that's real. Then, of course, you see the other videos that are, you know, that's obviously a fake.
Right.
But there's some people out there producing some really good fakes.
Oh yeah.
You know, I mean, there really are. So, you know, I rely on my gut a lot, and you know, it's served me well throughout the years, but that doesn't say I can't be fooled. I certainly can, but you know, I just, you know, there's a new documentary that just came out not too long ago, and it was a really good documentary. It really was. They didn't try to overachieve. They talked about things that they knew, and it was a good documentary. And at the end of it, they had Jeff Meldrum in there for a bit. And at the end of it, there was a story about a gentleman, an older guy who had gotten cancer. And had gone out, I want to say it was somewhere in Alaska with his family, and they were, you know, enjoying this week-long vacation or whatever it was. And the older gentleman says that he witnessed one on the shores of the river where they were fishing. And he got super excited, and, you know, he felt like filled with joy that he was, you know, that God gave him the opportunity to actually see this thing, and it was a wonderful thing. Yeah. And then they bring his daughter on, and she was talking a really good story. And at the end, she had taken a flight in a small plane, and as they were going over this field, she got a photograph of one of these creatures walking through the field.
Mm-hmm.
And when I saw it, I was like, that looks like a guy in a costume.
Right.
You know, it was very reddish, very much like an orangutan.
Yeah.
And the face was non-distinct. You couldn't really make much out of it. And, you know, both my son and I, we watched the documentary, and we were like, that was really good. But that last bit at the end was just kind of
ruined it.
Why'd they put that in there? And, right. He lives up in Grand Rapids, and I don't know, maybe a couple of days later, he sends me a message, and he's like, man, that last segment really bugged me. And, he got a still photograph of it, and we're looking at it, and, you know, the outline of the face looked familiar. And he starts going to these Halloween websites. And he sends me this picture. And I took it real quick within, I don't know, 3 or 4 minutes. I took it on Photoshop on my phone. I cropped out the face of it. I turned it transparent so that you could see through it. And then I started moving it around and laying it over that image. And when I got it to the right spot, it was an exact match.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It was, you know, so, and then I even saw, and I think this was intentionally a disclaimer by Jeff Meldrum. He had made a post about that picture, and he said it seemed to be familiar to him. Like he might've seen it before.
Right.
He wasn't like calling anybody out, but he was kind of like indicating that there might be something a little off about it. And sure enough, he ended up posting a few days later, posting another picture where there was actually this person who was in the suit holding a sign saying something like, you know, I'm a Sasquatch or something like that. And it's like, you know, they did a really good job on that documentary. And then they ended it with a nice story about a guy who had cancer and got to see a Bigfoot. But then his daughter throws that monkey wrench into the gears, and it was like, man, that's a bad way to end a good documentary.
Yeah, you like you said, you get those, and imagine, you know, poor Jeff Meldrum. I mean, anything that comes in across America, he's one of the first people to get the information on it, or see it, or test it, or you know,
sure.
So I'm sure he's seen his fair share, but.
Well, interesting stuff, Shane. Interesting stuff. I appreciate you being with me tonight. And, you know, it sounds like you might have some areas of interest. So if you do decide to start taking a little bit deeper look into things, I would certainly appreciate if you keep my number. And if you find something, let me know what's going on up there.
I will. And I appreciate your time, too. Thank you.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's it for tonight. We'll see you next week. I want to hear your story. I want to hear your experience. So email me at contact.uncomfortable@gmail.com. If you enjoy the show, then leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. Share the show with your friends. Share the show on social media. Make sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter, all at Uncomfortable Podcast. And until next week, my friends, stay uncomfortable.
Thank you. Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.